This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. The hated hybrid tax, Medicaid. Religious rights for school kids, Medicaid. Mental health reform, Medicaid. Pension reform, Medicaid. Sensing a theme here? The Virginia General Assembly's 60-day 2014 session is fast approaching its close-by date, and lawmakers have accomplished a lot, but those who were predicting a major hang-up for this year's gathering appear to have been right on target. The debate over expanding Medicaid is as hot as ever, and it could even derail compromise on a new state budget. So this hour, we talk with advocates, legislators, and our analysis team about the latest in the Medicaid firestorm. But we'll also make time for some of those other lawmaking issues where agreement has been reached. Curious about what Richmond's been doing that could affect you? Our conversation begins right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. How much room do bicyclists deserve? What should school kids be allowed to say about religion? Do hybrid car owners pay their fair share? Just some of the questions our state lawmakers have been trying to address. And if you've got an answer to share, our phone lines are now open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Of course, the big controversy in Richmond continues to be over just what to do about Medicaid, and later in the hour, we will hear more about that from at least one member of the General Assembly and at least one member of the lobbying class. But if you've got questions or opinions to share right now on Medicaid or anything else political, in all numbers, we are at 888-967-2825. Already on the phone line with us from the Fredericksburg Freelance Star newspaper, Shelley and Davis, welcome.
Thank you.
Plus here with me in the Insight Studio, James Madison University political scientist Bob Roberts.
Glad to be here, Bob.
Shelley, and I'd like to go to you with our first really complex question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How much room do bicyclists deserve?
Oh, well, I certainly can't answer how much they deserve, but there is a bill. In fact, it just passed. It passed the Senate, and today it just passed out of a House committee that gives them an extra foot. So when you are passing a bicyclist or a moped or a couple of other things, an animal-drawn vehicle, you will now have to give them 3 feet as a minimum clearance rather than 2 feet, which is apparently the current law. That has passed the Senate and just this afternoon passed out of a transportation committee in the House.
I saw Bob Roberts giggling as I was asking you about this. And Bob, I take it that there are people who think that this is quite silly. On the other hand,
yes,
we have had bicycle enthusiasts here a number of times on the show explaining why they would, for years now, have been trying to get the Virginia law changed because the standard, they say, in most states is at least 3 feet.
Right.
And Virginia had an older, narrower standard that bicyclists thought left them unsafe.
But there's an issue here on the roads because many of the roads, for example, in Harrisonburg, are very narrow and streets park along, cars park along both sides of the road. So if you have a bicycle trying to go on, which we do in Harrisonburg all the time, along the cars, there may not be an extra foot that you can go as a car, because if you go an extra foot over, you'll be across the median, which is illegal. So in a sense, this may be difficult for a driver to actually do on some roads which are too narrow where you don't have the additional room to move over.
And I think that had long been the argument against it, why it hadn't gotten very far in
right.
past years. But apparently the bicycle enthusiasts are, in their view, making some progress
right.
in, I think they see it sort of as a symbolic thing, if nothing else,
right.
that bicyclists have just as much right to be on the road. And so you, if you see one, you ought to give them some extra
on
room.
New roads in Harrisonburg or in many cities, you have plenty of room to move over. Absolutely. So on some roads, it's easy to do so, and the law is a good law. In other roads, particularly in more congested areas, it's not possible to do. So in a sense, you cannot move over without violating the law by crossing the center line. So it's going to be on a road-by-road basis, which is difficult for a motorist to really deal with. So I'm not sure.
Shelley, and if I understand in the past, this kind of legislation has made it through the state Senate without much trouble. The question is whether it will make it through the full House. This is the first year that it has made it through a full House committee?
I did not really look up the past year, so I can't tell you exactly that. I know that I've seen this bill in the past, and it has failed in the past. and the house is the most likely place where it has done so.
Well, something that may affect even more people is standards of learning, and there has been some talk since the beginning of this year's General Assembly session that they were going to kind of whittle down those standardized tests for school kids. Where are we at on that? Do you know?
Those bills are making their way through. There were a lot that were proposed early in session, and in the process, they've sort of gotten narrowed down. Think of the House, for example. The main bill is one from Delegate Tag Greeson. Everything else has been rolled into that. And what it does is it reduces the number of standards of learning tests in the lower grades, 3 to 5 and elementary and middle school, to try to avoid what proponents of the bills have said has become sort of a teaching to the test, a focus on rote memorization that is not allowing enough time for kids to really learn and absorb material.
What is the status of the more controversial issue as part of the standards of learning and No Child Left Behind? There's a provision basically to have the state take over schools. And under the law that was implemented by the former governor, the state was preparing to take over schools, I believe, in Portsmouth. And there's been an effort to stop that. There's a lawsuit to block it.
Right. There's a lawsuit to block it. I think in the two competing budget proposals from the House and Senate, I believe one of them has defunded it and the other has not.
Right.
So I think we'll kind of have to wait and see on that. But generally, once there's a lawsuit, the legislature is a bit reluctant to take a lot of action until they see what a court does about it.
But then legislatively, that there hasn't been any action to repeal that abolish that agency?
I do not recall.
Okay.
I couldn't speak exactly. I'm sure there was legislation. Where it has gone, I do not recall.
Okay.
You're tuned to Virginia Insight. We have with us Bob Roberts, professor of political science and public administration at James Madison University. Plus by phone, Shelley-Ann Davis, a longtime political reporter and Richmond bureau chief for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, but just recently she took a promotion. Now she is an assistant editor at that newspaper. If you have a question or comment about anything political, but at least for this first half hour, we're focusing mostly on what's going on in state politics, but we'll take any comment or question about things political at 888-WMRA-TALK in all numbers. That translates to 888-967-2825. We have this question on our Facebook page, or I should mention, on Facebook, we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight, and you can post there to us. This is from Jenny, who says, how long will it be before a decision is final on same-sex marriage in Virginia? Is there any possibility that gay people could be allowed to marry here, I guess she means here in Virginia, before the current court case gets to the Supreme Court? Bob Roberts?
Interesting issue. The Attorney General took a very interesting position recently on the Norfolk case. He said he wouldn't support the position of the defending the law, but the Attorney General did announce that he would seek an appeal. So both the clerk of the court in Norfolk and the Attorney General's office is appealing that to the Fourth Circuit. The Fourth Circuit will probably take a couple months to decide how to hear the case. Maybe a couple of months after they hear it, render a decision. Then the question, the losing party would probably go to the Supreme Court. The case that is pending in Harrisonburg, that judge has raised the question, should he now render a judgment himself or basically wait to see what happens in Norfolk? He has not decided what he's going to do. Judge Ulansky has discussed this.
So bottom line for Jenny's question, is there any chance that same-sex marriage would be allowed in Virginia before the U.S. Supreme Court weighs in on this?
Highly unlikely.
Okay. Well, on the phone line with us now, member of the Virginia House of Delegates representing that body's 20th district, Republican from Stanton, Dickie Bell. Great to be speaking with you again, sir.
Hello, Tom. Nice to hear from you. Nice to be with you.
Well, Delegate Bell, I guess the most important question I need to get your guesstimate about is what's the chance that there's going to be agreement on a new state budget by the time the current legislative session is supposed to end Saturday, March 8th?
Well, I have to tell you, as of this moment, Tom, I think it's less than 50-50 that we'll have that finalized. Neither side seems to be moving very much on the big issue. And right now, the big issue, the only issue, is the Medicaid question. In other terms of the budget, there has been a lot of movement, and folks have negotiated and come together. The $40 million spending gap, for example, is now down to about $20 million, about half of that, and they've accomplished that in a week's time. And they, as what I heard today, was that the conferees are very confident they can close that gap even further. But the question remains on the Medicaid expansion. And I don't know. My feeling is I'm not a conferee, and I'm not close to the negotiations. But my general feeling is that we're not very close on any kind of an agreement or compromise as far as Medicaid expansion goes.
Delegate Bell, here with me, two people you know from James Madison University's Political Science Department, Bob Roberts, plus a former longtime political reporter, now newest editor for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, Shelley Ann Davis.
Yes.
And I'm thinking Shelley Ann might have a question for you.
Okay.
Actually, if I had had a question, it would have been that. So I will ask you what you think the status of mental health reforms, particularly the time for temporary detention orders. Where do you think that's going to wind up as a compromise?
Well, I think, you know, it's a little disappointing on one hand that we haven't moved a little quicker with the mental health reforms. Everybody knows we need them, and everybody knows that we need to address those things. And the tragedy that set everybody off and caused so many knee-jerk reactions with Senator Deeds should have, I think, spurred us to a little quicker action, a little better action. I think there are going to be some positive improvements. It doesn't look to me like at this point that we're going to get everything some of us would have hoped for. One of the things that I think maybe we didn't see coming was the strong lobby by folks like the law enforcement community who claim that they don't have the resources to hold these patients longer or to watch over them. And if we can iron out some of those differences, then I think we'll move ahead with some very good reform. If we find ourselves in a standoff there, then we may not get as much as we hope for. I was hoping for actually some sweeping reforms. Looks like we will have a statewide bed registry. I think that's a really good thing. But the temporary detention orders and the emergency detention orders are just as important, because those are the crisis times that we really have to protect these people from, and protect their families and anybody else they come in contact from. So I hope we get something good. There's a lot of massaging going on with those things right now.
Delegate Bell, following up to your previous comment related to my question about the state budget, I think, Dickie, I heard you say that in the conference going on between the Senate and the House over the state budget, where Medicaid is the big issue, that you don't see much likelihood of compromise. That word struck me because it seems to me that neither side has any compromise in mind. Your side, the Republicans in the House, don't want any kind of Medicaid expansion. And the Senate, with the majority Democrats and a couple of Republicans, want something done on Medicaid expansion.
Well, let me just clarify that a little bit, Tom. It's not 100% accurate to say that no Republicans want Medicaid expansion. We passed legislation last year to establish the Merck group, the Commission on Innovation and Reform for Medicaid, and that was in an attempt to make some of the reforms that we felt this system needed, because the system is broken and it needs a lot of work.
I'm sorry, we're about to hit the break, but the bottom line there is your stance and your colleagues in the House who are Republicans' stance is that until there are these reforms, we should not be expanding Medicaid. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yes, sir.
Thank you so much, Delegate Dickie Bell, Republican from Stanton, representing the House of Delegates 20th District. As always, it's great to talk with you, sir. Thanks for making some minutes for us.
Thanks, Tom.
We're going to continue here on Virginia Insight. We actually have somebody representing the Virginia Hospital Association who also wants to talk about Medicaid in about a minute. You are tuned to Virginia Insight. Here with me in the Insight studio, Bob Roberts, a professor of politics and a professor of public policy at James Madison University. With us by phone, the former political reporter, now assistant editor for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star newspaper, Shelley-Ann Davis. And now joining us by phone, we have someone who has worked for a long time for the Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association, an advocacy group for medical centers across the Commonwealth. She is actually that organization's senior vice president, Catherine Webb. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Glad to be here.
Well, Ms. Webb, you've been watching very closely this whole debate in Richmond over whether or not to expand Medicaid. Tell us, in your view, where that issue stands right now and how close that is to where hospitals across the Commonwealth would like the issue to be.
Ooh, that's a great question. My first response is this is not where we want to be in the kind of fight that apparently we are having. But that said, we certainly understand where the folks in the House and where the folks in the Senate stand on the issue of closing the coverage gap in the Commonwealth. They have very different views, and what we are trying to do is work to find that elusive compromise that would allow for Virginia to begin to address closing what we call the coverage gap, and that would be finding a way to provide insurance for at least some portion of the 1 million uninsured Virginians.
This is Professor Roberts. What is the dollar? There's a lot of controversy over the dollar amount hospitals face losing, and a misunderstanding that as part of this Obamacare compromise, that hospitals gave up federal money in anticipation of getting money for unreimbursed care by having many more people eligible for Medicaid.
Bob, that's such a great question. So before we ask Catherine to address the fullness of your question, and I'm going to let you complete it, it occurs to me that there are some people who might be a little bit lost at this point.
Right.
So let's go back over the basics.
Okay.
When what is now commonly referred to as Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was approved by Congress, it included in it an expectation that Medicaid expansion would take place across the country and that the federal government would pay states to do this, the complete cost of increasing the number of people, poor people, covered by Medicaid for the first 3 years, and then for every year after that at a level of 90%.
Correct.
So after the first 3 years, each state would have to cover 10% of the additional cost of expanding Medicaid. Then the Supreme Court came along and ruled that pretty much everything about the Affordable Care Act was okay, except for that thing about forcing states to expand Medicaid.
Correct.
And then it became up to each state individually. So now we're in a situation where Virginia so far has decided not to expand Medicaid. We have a new governor who's a Democrat who wants that decision changed. We have a state Senate where all of the Democrats and a couple of Republicans have said we really ought to move forward on this, but we have an overwhelmingly Republican House of Delegates, the other body in the state legislature, that has basically said there's no way we're doing this anytime soon. We can't trust the federal government to keep its promise to pay for this. It's going to cost us too much money. And besides that, Medicaid is fraught with waste. We shouldn't even think about it, as I think Delegate Dickie Bell was telling us a little bit earlier, until there have been improvements in Medicaid. So now we're in a situation where what you were just about to ask Catherine Webb from the Hospital Association is, we have this new federal law that is cutting back in other areas where it was giving money to hospitals, because when the law was originally passed, it was presumed that what they would gain in Medicaid payments would make up for it.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
So how much are we talking about?
How much are we talking
in
about
in terms of
federal cuts?
Yes, and potential lost federal money by not expanding it. And what impact will that have on hospitals? I think what the listeners need to understand is what impact not expanding will have on hospitals. and their ability to deliver care?
Well, that was about 7 questions.
Okay, but generally,
which I think shows you the complexity of this issue. So let me start and see if I can explain it this way.
Okay.
When the Affordable Care Act was passed, the decision was made by Congress to fund it 2 ways. The first way was cutting reimbursements for Medicare services provided by hospitals to Medicare patients. The second way they decided to pay for it was through taxes on organizations, individuals, and businesses. And the Medicare cuts only to hospitals, not any other provider, began in 2010. And they have increased every year since then, and they are expected to continue to increase. I'll give you the numbers for 2014. Mm-hmm. The Affordable Care Act Medicare cuts are $122 million to Virginia hospitals. Now, the other interesting thing, separate and apart from the Affordable Care Act, is this thing called sequestration, which came about after the Affordable Care Act was passed. And Congress decided then that they would take an additional 2% off of Medicare payments to hospitals throughout the country. For Virginia, in 2014, that is $85 million in additional cuts.
So my math is not all that good, but it sounds to me like just what you've described so far, Catherine Webb, is more than $200 million in losses for hospitals across Virginia.
That's just for 1 year. In 2015, the Affordable Care Act cuts go to $251 million.
Catherine Webb from the Hospital Association, I know that we've only got you on the line for a couple of more minutes, and we've only got Shelley and Davis from the Freelance Star for a couple more minutes. So I just wanted to check with Shelley and see if she had a question for you before she had to leave us.
Really, all I'd say is, you know, where do you see this going? You know, there's a little over a week left. Do you think that they're going to get a resolution, or do you think that this fight is going to, I guess, continue past what is alleged to be the adjournment day?
I think, sadly, that it will continue. I think that, you know, the cuts back in the communities, the effects of these Affordable Care Act cuts, and the possibility that Virginia could get a return some of the tax dollars that our citizens and our businesses are paying to the federal treasury. We can get some of those dollars returned to Virginia. It's a positive thing, but I don't, at this point, we do not have a resolution. We have very strong feelings on both sides, and we have a governor who has committed to try and close the coverage gap. And I do want to say this. We don't talk in terms of expanding Medicaid, and I think that's a very important distinction to make. Because what we are saying is let's find a way in Virginia to do something very important for our citizens, the 400,000 people who might be eligible if we could find a way to accept these federal dollars. We are talking in terms of finding a solution by working with the private sector so that it would be a more of a private sector benefit plan for these people, not a Medicaid benefit plan.
Catherine Webb, Senior Vice President of the advocacy group Virginia Hospital and Healthcare Association, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you very much for including me.
Shelley and Davis spent some 14 years as the Virginia political reporter and Richmond bureau chief for the Fredericksburg Freelance Star, but as of just a matter of days ago, she moved to her new post as that newspaper's assistant editorial page editor. Shelley, and congratulations on the new job, and thanks for making time for us.
Thank you. Anytime.
So now on the phone line with us, another former Virginia political reporter in her days with the Washington Post. These days, though, she covers the world in her role as White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service. Anita Kumar, great to have you back on the Inside Airwaves. Hi, Anita.
Hi, Anita.
Hi.
Hi.
Anything happening in Washington today? Maybe
always,
maybe Joe Biden stuff?
Always something happening. Yes, I was listening to the vice president today. He is the DNC, Democratic National Committee, is in town for a couple days, and the president's going to speak to them tomorrow. But today was the vice president's turn, and so he gave them a little bit of a pep talk, saying that he's heard that people are kind of pessimistic about the November elections for Democrats, that they were going to lose some House seats and Senate. They might even lose the Senate, which they narrowly have right now. And he was saying, no way, Democrats are going to do just fine. And his reason was that he said, if you look at polls, the majority of Americans support Democratic policies. And he was talking about immigration, raising the minimum wage, investing in infrastructure like roads and bridges, and things like that. And he said, if we just talk about the issues, our issues, then we'll do fine.
Anita, it strikes me that there are other polls that show that Democrats are hurting when it comes to things related to the issues we've just been talking about.
Yes.
and that has to do with the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare.
Yes, and I guess you all have been talking a bit about that. He actually did mention health care, but he did not dwell on it. You know, health care is... It's actually, the last few months, it's been pretty much where it has been for a while, that it's not popular in some places. It's also that it's interesting whether, though, people say it should be repealed, as a lot of Republicans want. And most people, or many people, do not think that. That's less number of people think it should be repealed, and a good number, 50-some percent, say it should be just changed and improved. And so that's what the Democrats are sort of talking about this year. It's sort of interesting in these elections, and it'll be interesting to see if this happens in Virginia's Senate race this year and some of those House races. But the Democrats are taking a little bit of a different tact. In 2000, for the elections, they really didn't talk about it. So the law had just passed. It was very controversial. They just kind of didn't really talk about it. Well, this year, they're being very aggressive, and they're saying, hey, it's not perfect, but we're the parties that's going to fix the law, as opposed to Republicans that just want to get rid of it. They don't have the votes to get rid of it.
It's interesting that the Kaiser poll that a lot of people are looking at, looked at whether voters want, it was a very well-done poll, looked at how many people want to get rid of it. And not a lot of people want to get rid of it.
I didn't see that one, but isn't it like I saw some polls that was 30-some percent.
Yeah, but the Kaiser one had
I'm sorry, 30-some percent that...
wanted to get rid of it.
Okay. But 50-some percent just want it fixed.
Fixed. And therefore, the dilemma that the Republicans face is a lot of Americans are now pretty happy that they can get health insurance without pre-existing conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And the Republicans have not come up with any way to guarantee that without this current system.
Right.
Because the whole system is predicated on having large enough pools to take care of individuals with pre-existing conditions. And amazingly, which has not been talked about, there's a whole segment of what I call arguably Republican voters that the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, and you may be aware of this survey, which caused a lot of consternation in the White House, that said that there were significant numbers of Americans quitting their jobs and it would reduce the workforce because of Obamacare. Now, why would people quit their jobs because of Obamacare? Because they're older, they couldn't retire because they couldn't get any health insurance. Now they can retire and get health insurance. And these are, I would arguably, Republican voters. A lot of them are older, a lot of them are males. And so now the Republicans have this dilemma. You have this older voting pool that were the ones who would be voting basically for Republicans, now have this entitlement that permits them to retire earlier than they could have and are very happy with it. That is the group that's probably as happy as any group you can imagine, that you can retire at 55 or 60 and get decent health insurance coverage, no pre-existing conditions, with a reasonable amount of money. I think that is going to have implications far beyond that the Republicans anticipated, or maybe they feared that particular group is not unhappy at all with the plan.
Well, to you who are listening, whether it's the specifics of the Affordable Care Act that we were discussing earlier, whether or not to expand Medicaid coverage in Virginia, the general Affordable Care Act known as Obamacare across the country, what the prospects you see for Democrats or Republicans on that issue or anything else going on in Congress or in Virginia, how about the discussions recently about the debt ceiling, about income inequality, about raising the minimum wage, about how the new governor is doing in your view? We're open to any comments, questions, suggestions on anything political here with Bob Roberts and Anita Kumar and myself, Tom Graham, on this edition of Virginia Insight. How do you participate? Well, you could call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or you could post to us on Facebook, where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Speaking of the debt ceiling, Anita, it wasn't all that long ago that looked like it might be a big issue, and then it just kind of fizzled.
Well, I just don't know that that's going to happen so much this year. In fact, it's interesting. I was at a breakfast with reporters and Senator Bob Corker, who's of Tennessee, Republican, who was really very much involved in that issue last year. Someone asked him about, is anything going to get done with that this year? And he said, no. So, you know, but we did see some news this week that the chairman on the Republican side in the House, so the person who's in charge, the chairman of the committee, Ways and Means Committee, put out a long anticipated proposal yesterday that's basically the first real overhaul of the tax code since 1986. And it was well received, except that a lot of people still don't think it's going to go anywhere. So it was well received in that even Democrats said, wow, this is great that we're talking about it, that he put it out there, but doesn't sound like it's going to go anywhere. In fact, the speaker's quote, his first quote about it was blah, blah, blah. Literally, that's what he said.
This was a member of his caucus, a Republican congressman from Michigan.
Right, and a chairman of a very important committee.
Who put together a whole reform package. A large part of it involved lowering rates, income tax rates for everybody, but making it revenue neutral by closing loopholes.
Right.
And a surcharge on individuals with particularly high income, that it was going to put a very high, and it wasn't clear who those people were. I think they would have been Hollywood stars, probably, who are making lots of money.
But if I understand what Anita's saying, people at the White House in the Obama administration were reacting somewhat favorably to this Republican congressman's proposal.
They were not hostile to it.
His own party, not so much.
No.
Well, let's be real here. In Washington, if someone proposes something, it's great. There's just something out there. So in that regard, they were really happy with it in that there was a constructive conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, what about the fence cuts?
Okay, hold on to that. Would you please? You can hear the music.
I can hear the music.
Yeah. We're going to have to pause for the break, but it's only going to be about a minute long. And when we get back, our first call up is going to be Andy from Blacksburg, who has a whole different tax issue, I understand, he wants to ask us about. So we'll get to that in just a bit more than 60 seconds. White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, Anita Kumar, is with us. Also, from James Madison University Politics and Public Administration Department's Bob Roberts. I'm Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. Next, we're going to Blacksburg. Andy, thanks for calling in. Your question, your comment, please.
I have three comments I wanted to share about the hybrid vehicle tax in the state of Virginia.
Well, let's get to as many of them as we can.
Firstly, the idea that hybrid vehicles initially cost more, typically, if you look at the same model, whether it's hybrid or standard gasoline engine. So initially, you're paying more into the sales tax bill. That's one thought. Secondly, most hybrid vehicles put less wear and tear on the road because they're lighter. You think of your standard Prius or some of the hybrid cars. Compare those to pickup trucks or sedans. They put less wear and tear on the roadways. And thirdly, hybrid vehicles, many of them out there, I have a Toyota Highlander hybrid vehicle that gets 27 miles per gallon. I'm paying just as much, at least when we were taxing based on fuel tax, I was paying just as much or more than many other drivers on the roadway as far as road taxes.
And I believe the governor just signed the repeal.
Yeah, okay. So one of the things that Andy's responding to is at the top of the show, I had mentioned the much-hated hybrid tax, but also I asked the question, are hybrid car owners paying their fair share? Because there's an argument here on both sides. I mean, I think it was last year. Originally, there was a proposal to put a special tax on hybrid cars of $100. And then that was dropped to something.
Right.
Andy, do you remember? Was it somewhere around $60?
It was $100. I paid it last year.
But it was dropped at some point.
And I don't know that. I just know that I just got done paying it not too long ago.
Okay. So as of, I think it was yesterday, the governor signed into law the reversal of any extra tax on hybrid cars.
Right.
I did not. I wasn't aware of that.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
So that makes you happy.
That makes you happy.
I would say one thing, though, is going to be a bigger issue going forward, is that when you get to plug-in vehicles, this will become more of an issue. When you start plugging into the wall to charge vehicles up and start using the power grid to power vehicles instead of fuels, this could become a bigger issue, because then you really do have people using the roadways and not paying their fair share. So some way we may have to deal with this in the future, and one of those ways is looking at vehicle miles traveled and a tax paid based on that, and maybe the weight of the vehicle that you drive.
Yeah, and that has been proposed in terms of as a way to alternative to the gas tax, as a form of financing the roads. And there's been considerable discussion of that.
Yes, that's good.
Absolutely.
I hope they move that way.
Yep.
Andy, keep listening, because we do have this comment on Facebook that I think you're going to like. This is from Margo on the Virginia Insight Facebook page, who says hybrid vehicles typically weigh less and so result in less wear and tear. I wonder if they're related. less wear and tear on the roads, whereas larger vehicles, especially semis, significantly impact road wear. Additionally, hybrid vehicles produce fewer emissions, helping to protect Virginia's air quality.
Right.
Considering all of this, hybrids provide far better benefit than deficit. The fairness argument seems specious when the legislature has not offered tax rebates for low mileage per gallon vehicles, which must be, by their logic, paying too much. You want to do more than just smile?
I agree. I thought the tax was silly at the time. Most people will want to encourage people to get hybrids, not discourage them. So this idea of a free rider was silly at the time. And the legislature quickly came to the idea was not really going to make the state that money. And so rapidly did the legislature agree this year to get rid of it, because it really was not a particularly a creative solution to a highway transportation funding solution.
Where are we, Anita Kumar, speaking of money, with the president's desire to raise the minimum wage?
Well, he's talking about it, and he applauded Gap stores last week. Was that last week? Where they decided to raise their own wages for thousands, tens of thousands of employees, but Congress isn't really taking a hard look at it. I mean, Democrats really want it, but it doesn't seem to be a priority right now. But he's going to keep talking about it. He mentions it pretty much in every speech these days.
And that's the big issue. I think Obama was over the weekend, somewhat like Biden, is saying that he was chastising Democrats in general by this belief Democrats hold, and political scientists hold the same belief, that in midterm elections, Democrats sit home and Republicans vote. And Obama was trying to tell Democrats, stop thinking like that.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, that if we can turn out the votes in presidential elections, there's no reason we can't turn out, and therefore the issues to motivate people, minimum wage will motivate people, and therefore that's why they're going to keep hitting the minimum wage issue.
I will say that in individual districts sort of across the country, a lot of the Democratic candidates are campaigning on it and are talking about it. But whether it comes to an actual vote and passes...
No, it's not going to pass.
Yeah,
But the issue is going to stay on the table as a way, how do we motivate voters to come out?
Right. And yeah, it's not going very much, going far in Congress.
Nope.
Okay, so whether it's the hybrid tax, Medicaid, anything going on in Washington, internationally, or right here in our own backyard in Virginia, we've got Bob Roberts from James Madison University's Political Science Department and Anita Kumar, White House correspondent for the McClatchy News Service, to address whatever political issue you want to bring up. 888-WMRA-TALK, the easy way to remember our phone number. In all numbers, it's 888-967-2825. I'm thinking there are a lot of people listening to NPR stations who like hybrid cars, because we're going next to Nelson County with Ann, and I think she has something to say on this issue, too. Ann, thanks for joining us.
Hi. I drive a Prius, and I was very upset when that law was first passed. I felt like I was being punished for doing what was best for the environment. And I'm wondering, since I just learned from you that the law has indeed been repealed,
correct,
do I have to pay the bill I got last week for this $104?
Yes, you do. Yes, you
rats
do. Yes, sorry. It's not there was no provision in the law to retroactively refund, which had been suggested, that you retroactively refund people who paid it or expected to pay it. It is for the next billing period. Not this period. Sorry.
It doesn't usually happen that they that they do that retroactively.
The retroactively. It has happened.
But not that often.
Not that often, and not this time. So I'm afraid you are stuck with it for this year, but not in future years.
Hey, Ann, that's such a great question. Before you go away, I've got a question for you. As you may recall, this much-hated tax on hybrid cars was part of a transportation compromise last year. That was the first time in decades that Virginia had come up with a plan for raising money in a number of different ways to improve transportation across the state. They're losing, what, more than $100 million a year now that they're getting rid of the hybrid tax? Bob's nodding his head. Do you have any suggestions, Ann, for how they come up with that money, since they're not going to get it from hybrid cars?
I don't think it's that much, but it's...
Well, I don't think I'm the authority on that, but...
I mean, is there somebody else that you'd like to see taxed?
Pardon me?
Is there somebody else that you'd like to see taxed?
Somebody that I would like to what?
See taxed.
See taxed.
To
since
attack.
It's
taxed.
T-A-X-E-D.
Well, like somebody, I heard you refer to somebody else that said, you know, the big trucks that use the roads more, that abuse the roads more. If, you know, maybe it could be a usage fee. Maybe taxes in general, maybe gas tax needs to go up.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. We've got somebody who's been driving along an interstate, but has promised that he is pulled over safely now. Brent, thanks for joining us on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Bob Roberts, Anita Kumar, or myself, Tom Graham?
Well, hi. Thank you. It was a really interesting show today. And I was wondering, it's not as sexy as raising the minimum wage, but didn't know if there was any legs to the suggestion to bump up the earned income tax credit. Some economists had brought it up and didn't know what your panelists thought of that.
What a great question, Brent. Anita, have you heard much about that? That tends to be something Republicans favor more than Democrats.
Well, except that I believe that the president wanted to change that or talk about that, but he was disappointed. Bob, correct me if I'm wrong, that it wasn't part of the plan that was announced yesterday.
No,
that,
it wasn't at all.
That it was that the plan, just to be clear, that we don't think is going anywhere.
This is
was,
Congressman Kemp from Michigan,
right,
the Republican,
right,
who,
yeah,
put together the tax reform proposal. Yeah.
And that is actually, we talked about some of the things, the nice things that the White House said about the plan, but they had a couple things that they did not like, and that was actually specifically one thing that they,
correct,
did mention that they had hoped would be in there.
No, there's not a lot of support at all. And in fact,
why?
The idea, I think it's hard for legislators to get their mind around the fact that large numbers of Americans really don't pay the earned income, you know, tax. They're paying other taxes, okay, not income taxes. They're paying the tax burden on a lot of young people are they're paying a lot of taxes in proportion, and the earned income tax credit is designed to reduce that burden of taxation. And so if you don't have enough, why pay someone money out of the general revenue if they haven't earned enough to really be taxed? See what the argument? In other words, why give them, you know, additional money when they really haven't earned enough to, you know, pay a lot of taxes already.
Brandt, I'm curious, do you have a sense in your mind that you would rather see an increase in that earned income tax credit rather than an increase in the minimum wage?
I didn't really have a preference of the EITC over the minimum wage, but I thought it could possibly be a middle ground if more Republicans like it, and if it has a better chance of passing, and it has a better chance of helping the working poor, where it accomplishes some of the goals that the Democrats wanted, it seems like a good middle ground for everyone.
Yeah, for example, FICA taxes. Everybody pays their
Social Security taxes, Medicare.
And Medicare. And therefore, by doing this, you would raise disposable income.
Okay.
Yeah. And therefore,
we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
Got to make room for another call. But Brent, I do want to thank you for calling in. We're going to go next to Fishersville. Stark, thanks for calling us. Your question or comment for Bob Roberts or Anita Kumar, please.
I've got several.
Well, we've only got a couple minutes, so please get your favorite out first.
First, 10 years ago, it was proposed that they raise the gas tax a nickel. Had that been done, we would have more funds to pave, enough funds to pave every road in Virginia twice, probably. It's been voted down and voted down. The price of gas has gone up a dollar and a half, and everybody's still driving. A nickel would not, if somebody sneezes in Venezuela, the price goes up 10 cents in a week. A nickel a gallon is minimal. And the second thing I'd like to say is you keep saying Obamacare, and that is definitely a prejudiced statement, because 80% of the people in the country think the Affordable Care Act is a good idea. 40% think Obamacare is a good idea.
Well, that's an interesting point, Stark. I had said a number of times, sometimes called Obamacare, and I called it the Affordable Care Act, and I'm sort of torn on how to title it these days, since the president now has accepted Obamacare.
Actually, his quip now is, hey, I do care. I don't mind you saying Obamacare.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
And I think you're right in terms of popularity. I think it's beginning to – the Democrats calculated that if the plan was implemented, it would become popular, and it's gradually the group I referred to, which was the CBO did this wonderfully interesting study that large number of people who felt trapped by their jobs couldn't leave, now can leave, is an interesting fact that the constituency for Affordable Care Act, I will not use Obamacare.
Oh, you did before.
And, I know I did. is going to get larger. And that's what the Republicans are concerned about. Once it gets into place, you can't repeal it, because there'll be such a backlash against repealing it. That's what their fear has been from day one. Once it gets in place, once it's there, you don't get rid of it. And so you're correct. It's growing in popularity because voters don't see any alternative to it.
And, Sark, thanks so much for taking the time to call us. And I'm sorry we are just out of time, but we do have a tradition of trying to toss a last confounding question to Anita whenever she's with us. So, Anita, I'm actually going to let you choose this time.
Uh-oh.
Do you want to talk about food labeling or the president's new initiative on minority boys and men?
I'll take the – since he's currently speaking about the minority boys and men, I will take that.
Okay.
What do you want to know about it?
Give us 60 seconds on what's happening.
The president today is announcing a new national initiative where he is asking businesses and nonprofits, foundations to come together, and by come together I mean also put in money, donate money, so that they can come up with a series of things that would help minority, primarily African American, some Hispanic, you know, other boys, young boys, so that they can do better in life. So that can be anything from early childhood development, it could be safety things, it could be literacy, it could be any number of programs that he wants to sort of start this conversation and put some money into some programs.
This is a combination of the president using the bully pulpit as well as gathering substantial sums of money from a number of different foundations and charities to help fund improvements in education and other areas.
Right. So far we've only heard money from foundations and charities, but businesses say they will put in, but we haven't heard a number. And, you know, this is important. He says, you know, he's an African-American man. He grew up without a father, and he says he was just like them. He was just like some of these boys, but he turned out okay, I guess. And he wants to sort of provide for them. And I will say that one of the things that really stirred him was the Trayvon Martin case a couple years ago. So
we'll talk about food labeling next time. Earlier in the hour, we heard from Fredericksburg Freelance Star assistant editor Shelley Ann Davis, plus the Virginia Hospital Association's Catherine Webb, as well as Republican member of the House of Delegates Dickie Bell. But still with us as we close out the hour, professor of political science from James Madison University Bob Roberts and McClatchy News Service White House correspondent and Charlottesville native Anita Kumar. Thanks so much.
You're
allowed to say how thrilled you were to be here for the whole hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find postings on Virginia Insight on the Virginia Insight tab at WMRA.org. When you get to the page for today's broadcast, you will find links to more information about all of our guests. Thanks for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.